Well, as the two vice presidential candidates face off tonight for their first and only debate in Danville, Kentucky, we want to take a look at both Paul Ryan and Joe Biden, their records, their biographies. Let's start with 42-year-old Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, a rising star in the GOP, a budget hawk. Some of his plans call for cuts to food stamps and Pell Grants, personal and corporate tax rates, but also he says he'd get rid of many tax deductions and loopholes. Questions about those ideas are certain to come up tonight. Craig Gilbert is Washington Bureau Chief of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us on his cell phone. He's in Kentucky heading for tonight's debate, I assume?
I am.
Well, let's start with the thumbnail biography because people feel they may know Ryan in some ways. He's spoken eloquently about growing up in Janesville. There in southern Wisconsin, his family built a road building company into a national construction firm. Ryan still lives in Janesville. And then, of course, as a teen, he's the one who found his father, you know, dead in bed one morning. He died in his sleep. Just a little bit about how Janesville and that story of his dad propelled him into politics.
You know, he was 16 when that happened, when he lost his father. He talks about it as, you know, kind of thrust into adulthood. You know, the connection that he draws between that and his political philosophy is one of self-reliance. It's hard to know how to connect all those dots. He didn't come from a really political family, although his grandfather had been a U.S. attorney in Wisconsin. His father was a lawyer. His father wasn't part of the big construction business that his great-grandfather had built up.
Well, you could say potentially that one of the dots is Ayn Rand, because he's, of course, a devotee of Ayn Rand's notion of the individual doing for himself over the group,
yes.
You know,
yes,
giving someone a leg up.
Yeah. Yeah, those are dots and those are influences. Certainly, when you talk about the intellectual influences, I mean, he's been very forthright talking about Ayn Rand as an influential figure. After Ayn Rand, you know, you get to the Austrian economists and people like Hayek, who wrote the famous book Road to Serfdom, people with a very individualistic worldview, free markets, limited governments.
Well, Republicans tapped him to run for office at 28. In 1998, he won his seat. And then moving forward, he is said to have been embarrassed by the Bush years, the spending on two wars, the tax cut, the Medicare drug entitlements, but he still voted for them.
Yeah, you know, he was kind of a good soldier in a lot of ways. He complained a little bit about that, and, you know, he put out his plans. He had his roadmap, which came late in the Bush presidency. So you can't say that he was a rebel. And obviously, Republicans have been much more vocal about spending under a Democratic president than under a Republican president. But things he's been talking about, he has been talking about for a long time.
Well, he did become, you'd say, a rebel at one point. He's now the torchbearer for the younger, more ideological wing of the Republican Party, not just pushing his fiscal plans, but also making everybody work out with him. In fact, Paul Ryan's bicep has its own Twitter account that you can follow. But how much muscle did he really exercise in the party? Because early on, his attempts at getting across this Ayn Rand thinking, you know, he was the one, for instance, who tried to get President Bush to privatize Social Security. Early on, it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't. And that was obviously a big failure of President Bush. He's been an advocate for some time. In all these election cycles, I've had conversations with him about, you know, his complaint has been that the party didn't draw sharp philosophical lines, it didn't run on bold policies. After 2008, he began to have a real influence, I think, in the party, and obviously the big evidence of that is everyone's surprise and shock getting his caucus to vote for his budgets, which contained these massive restructuring of Medicare. And so that was something that would not have happened without the 2010 election and the Tea Party conservatives coming to power, but he was really the driving force behind pushing the party in that policy direction.
Well, and again, this blueprint that he has now has been modified several times over the years and made more moderate, but still, as you said, it calls for at least partially privatizing Medicare. It would also cut trillions from federal programs, food stamps, Pell Grants. But where does Paul Ryan differ from Mitt Romney on this? Because we're assuming that tonight Joe Biden is going to perhaps push Paul Ryan for the answer that Mitt Romney didn't give on this $4.9 trillion, maybe not $5 trillion, but $4.9 trillion plan to cut. Where are the cuts going to come? You know, where do Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney disagree?
Well, you can certainly find differences between Paul Ryan's roadmap, which was the big grand sweeping document that preceded the budget, and Paul Ryan's budget. You can find differences between both of those proposals and what Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are supporting in this campaign. I mean, that's not a big surprise. I think Paul Ryan's position today is he's with Mitt Romney on all these issues. Their tax proposal is different from Paul Ryan's original tax proposal. Paul Ryan has told me that he supports a less progressive tax code. You cut taxes on upper rates, and you also cut taxes for business. business and on investment and the kinds of things where wealthier Americans draw their income. His argument is do that, and that makes the tax code less progressive, but it generates growth, and then that growth benefits all. That's been his argument. Mitt Romney's current position is that we're not going to make the tax code more regressive.
Well, Ryan also might be asked about earmarks. He's seemed to change his mind on those. He's long fought for federal money for Jamesville. That's what lawmakers do. That he came out against any earmarks in 2008. And the New Yorker's Ryan Lizza reports on how the town is now getting federal help for things like an innovation center and an expansion of a highway that businesses have wanted because a GM plant closed. But Paul Ryan, you know, can't get credit for that. President Obama can. So what other questions might he face tonight?
Those kinds of questions, certainly. Differences with Mitt Romney. You know, he supported the auto bailout. There was a lot of criticism, of course, of Paul Ryan after his convention speech when he criticized President Obama for rejecting Simpson-Bowles, the big bipartisan commission on reducing the deficit, when Paul Ryan also opposed Simpson-Bowles. So there are questions like that. Paul Ryan, you know, like a lot of people in Congress, is not a purist. You're going to find things in his record that conservatives have been unhappy about at one time or another. I mean, he voted for Medicare Part D, the prescription drug benefit under President Bush, which some conservatives opposed. But by and large, he's got a record that conservatives like, but he's not an absolute down-the-line purist on some of these issues. And he is a guy that works his district and tries to represent his district, so he's taken votes for his district.
He's also defended wage laws that are favored by unions, although he stood with the governor in Wisconsin when he fought the unions. And what are Paul Ryan's strengths as you see them? Enormously popular.
Yeah, I mean, he's got personal political skills. Everybody who works with him in Congress on both sides of the aisle will tell you that he's a nice guy, a collegial guy, a likable guy. He's very at ease with journalists, and he tends to be accessible. He has some communication skills, even when it comes to talking to people outside the Republican base, because he comes from a district that's not a hard red district. It's a Republican-leaning purple district. So he's used to trying to solicit votes and solicit support outside of the hardcore Republican base of support, even though, as we've talked about, his worldview and his policies are very conservative.
That's Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, on his cell phone heading to tonight's debate in Kentucky, telling us a little bit about candidate Paul Ryan. Craig, thanks so much.
It's a pleasure.
So Paul Ryan has been preparing for the debate tonight in Kentucky with Ted Olson, the former Solicitor General playing Vice President Biden. Joe Biden has been making dry runs with Democratic Representative Chris Van Hollen of Maryland playing Ryan. Tonight's debate is thought to be a proxy match for the top of the ticket, but also, in at least Joe Biden's case, and maybe Paul Ryan's as well, a preview for 2016. Biden's debate with Sarah Palin was one of the most watched ever. Now he's got another young rising star whippersnapper to deal with. When we come back, a look at how Vice President Joe Biden will face the challenges he faces tonight. That's in 1 minute, here and now. We're back with our look at the two vice presidential candidates, Congressman Paul Ryan and Vice President Joe Biden, ahead of tonight's debate, which, by the way, is scheduled for 9 p.m. East Coast time. Let's take a look now at 69-year-old Joe Biden, who served as a U.S. Senator from Delaware for 36 years before becoming vice president. David Draley is editor-at-large for Time magazine. David, start with a thumbnail on Joe Biden. Grew up in Steel Country, Scranton, Pennsylvania, blunt, ebullient, said to be a key in the Democratic Party to white male voters, all good. But as John Heileman of New York Magazine writes in a profile, he can also become a human IED. Some would say, you know, gaff prone. Name some, if you will.
Well, going back to his days as chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the Clarence Thomas hearings, he was made himself pretty much a laughing stock with his long-winded, non-question questions, and sort of became famous as the loose cannon at that point. And more recently, he's had a couple of errors on the campaign trail. He got out ahead of the president on the issue of gay marriage.
Yes, he famously went on national television and said he was in favor of it before the administration was ready to say that. And then, of course, there was the remark when he spoke to the African-American audience.
Yes, yeah. That the Republicans, Mitt Romney, wanted to put African-Americans back in chains.
And unshackle Wall Street.
That's right. People rightly thought that was irresponsible and over the top.
But on the other hand, what does he do for the ticket?
He does a couple of things. The traditional role of an attack dog in the running mate that allows the head of the ticket to sort of rise above the fray a little bit. Biden is good at that. He's extremely good at relating to ordinary people, which in the case of President Obama, who is not as comfortable in the one-on-one, Biden is great at rolling up his shirt sleeves and walking into a bar or into a cafe, ordering a piece of pie, sitting down and talking with people about kitchen table issues.
John Helleman, writing in New York Magazine, says it's easy to see why, with economic anxiety, he's the campaign's arrowhead, because he's the only person on either party ticket, according to John, who's genuinely fluent in the language of populism. You have Mitt Romney talking about people going to emergency rooms if they need health care, or their parents if they need a college loan. Paul Ryan holding to cutting social service programs. And then you have Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think John's exactly right about that. For a man who spent his whole career in Washington, he's remarkably in touch with real life. And, you know, that started with growing up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, as he famously will tell us. But it also has to do with suffering a terrible tragedy early in his life when his wife and daughters were killed in a car accident. That happened basically the same time he was elected to the Senate. So his whole career has been shadowed by real life. He's been there and has never lost that ability to relate. He talks about taking the Amtrak home from Washington all the time and knowing every conductor on every train. And he likes people, and that comes through.
But how would you characterize him as a lawmaker? You know, here we have Strom Thurmond, uber conservative, asked Joe Biden to deliver the eulogy when Strom Thurmond died. So he's got to be doing something right, reaching across the aisle. How would you characterize him?
Well, someone once said to me that if the United States Senate really was a club, Joe Biden would be the social director. He's always well-liked and well-respected by his colleagues. He took the Senate very seriously.
But what did he achieve? Here you have Paul Ryan holding up, you know, the blueprint for his party's fiscal feelings going forward. Yeah. What did Joe Biden achieve?
He's particularly proud of the Violence Against Women Act. I think when his Senate career is evaluated, he'll be judged among the most effective senators of his generation, with fingerprints on nearly every major piece of Democratic legislation.
Well, so where is he vulnerable? We know that Joe Biden had the president's ear. It was part of the condition of his being vice president that he be the last person the president speak to. But he's disagreed with him on policy on occasion. He disagreed initially on the troop surge in Afghanistan, and then was worried about the attack on Osama bin Laden.
Very worried about the bin Laden raid. Actually, I expect Biden will do very well in the debate, and I don't think he has big glaring vulnerabilities. But it's clear that he does talk to the president, but also that they disagree from time to time. And I think that creates some room in a debate for him to speak a little bit his own mind and not necessarily just channel the president.
And where might that happen? In other words, we asked where Paul Ryan might struggle with the fact that he differs from Mitt Romney on some policy issues. Where might that happen with Biden?
Biden definitely has a much richer, longer foreign policy record than the president, but I wouldn't anticipate that Biden will necessarily read line by line from the president's script on foreign policy issues. I think domestic policy, they're much closer.
Of course, everybody sees this as a proxy debate between Obama and Romney. When the topic of Libya and the attack in Benghazi comes up, as it, you know, it surely will, it's in the news this week, how will Joe Biden defend the Obama administration against charges that it waited too long to recognize it was a terrorist attack?
I think that's one of the things I'm going to be watching for most closely, because I think this is a issue that is only gaining strength as the days go by, and the administration's been obviously struggling to find a line that they can stick to and go with. And this is a subject where the administration really needs to turn a corner, and we'll see if Biden's able to do that.
What else is Joe Biden expected to do tonight? Does he bring up the comments that President Obama didn't, the 47%, for instance, the hidden tape?
I anticipate that that will come up, and probably more than once. Whether or not they feel that it'll work, they almost need to roll it out just to keep their own base happy.
David Vondrelia, editor-at-large for Time magazine. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Again, the debate, 9 p.m. East Coast time. Your thoughts. What do you want to see tonight? What question needs to be asked of the candidates or by the candidates of each other? Will you even tune in? Go to hereandnow.org or facebook.com/hereandnowradio. Tweet us at hereandnow, at hereandnowrobin. We read everything, which is why we are developing facial tics. Want to hear from you. Latest news is next. Here and Now.